Hello, you're welcome to Straight Talk Africa, coming to you from my home in Arlington, Virginia, a suburb of Washington, D.C. I am Shaka Sali, and today we are exploring the refugee situation in Africa. Joining us are two distinguished guests, Eskinder Negus, President and Chief Executive Officer of the U.S. Committee for Refugees and Immigrants. He joins us from Washington, D.C. And joining us from the Golden State City, San Diego, in California, of course, is Elizabeth Lowe, the Chief Executive Officer of the Nairo Sisters Initiative. I have to say, first of all, that I am profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the two of you on this special edition of Straight Talk Africa.
Well, thank you, Shaka. Thank you very much for inviting us. As you know, this is not my first time talking to you, so I wanted to just recognize, you know, your interest on the issue of refugees and in Africa and globally. So we're very grateful that, as you know, African refugees don't necessarily get immediate attention. So for you to focus on this issue, I think we are quite grateful. Thank you very much.
You're most welcome, Mr. Negus.
I also would like to say thank you so very much for this opportunity to be here. What an honor to be in the air with a great man like you and in a great station. This is my first time to join the Voice of America. I am so honored. Thank you so much.
Profoundly honored for your compliments and support. Let me come to you immediately, Mr. Eskinder Negus. What is the refugee situation like in Africa from your vantage point?
Well, thank you, Shaka. Before talking to Africa, I just want to give you just a brief overview of the global refugee situation. As we speak, according to UNHCR, 80 million forcibly displaced people worldwide. About 45.7 million are internally displaced. And then we have about 26.3 million are refugees. And as you know, 67% of all refugees are coming from five countries. Of course, the Syrian crisis, Venezuela, Afghanistan, but South Sudan is also about 2.3 million people. So the situation for African countries is not getting better. In fact, if I may say, the situation for African refugees is getting worse in Africa. Because of that crisis in Africa, a lot of refugees have decided to leave the continent and hoping to get resettled in other countries. Currently, as we speak, you know, there are about 1.4 million refugees are in Uganda. About 39% of refugees are hosted in Turkey, Colombia, Pakistan, and of course Uganda. So the African refugee situation is actually getting worse simply because the conflicts in different parts of the continent is continuing. As you know, in South Sudan, we spent the past 3-4 years in conflict that created millions of displaced people. Currently, the Ethiopian crisis is generating over 60,000 refugees going back to Sudan. That is in addition to over 100,000 Eritrean refugees who have been there since 1968. The refugee camp in Kenya is also the same. The Dadaab has been there since 1991. And then you have also another camp near the Sudan, also still there. So overall, I think the situation for African refugees is getting worse. And I say that also because of the COVID crisis. As you know, if you are a refugee in refugee camp or in urban setting, COVID has impacted many of them. And in fact, we don't even know how many urban refugees or refugees in general has been impacted by COVID. And as we now start speaking in terms of vaccine, I don't believe that refugees, African refugees or other refugees will be a priority, because we see some kind of vaccine nationality. So they are not a priority. So the situation overall for African refugee is actually getting worse than better.
You talk about the situation being compounded by the COVID-19 situation. What about the policies of the previous U.S. administration? What can you tell us about that?
Well, as you know, the previous U.S. administration has been very harsh when it comes to refugees and migrants. As you know, most African countries, including the Muslim ban, impacted Africa. And the number of refugees admitted to the U.S. was the lowest since 1975. So it did impact the number of asylum seekers to the U.S. also, to some extent, didn't get a chance to apply. So the previous administration policy on refugees and immigrants coming to the U.S. and in terms of global engagement of the U.S., has been very, very challenging and very difficult. But I'm happy to report to you that the new administration is actually within a few days have issued several executive orders. They also promised to bring in about 125,000 refugees in FY 2021, which is going to be challenging. But they have rescinded a lot of very damaging migration policies. Including, deferred action for childhood arrivals, as also referred DACA. They reversed the Muslim ban and the Africa ban. They're coming up with a lot of very, very positive policy in terms of refugees and immigrants. Again, the African refugees has been always the lowest refugees to be admitted to the U.S., and we believe that the new administration will consider, how refugees will be selected from what region. So we see a lot of good message from the administration. In fact, they extended the TPS, temporary protected status, for Liberians also, which is a good news because, as you know, the Liberians TPS holder are still in this country without the status, most of them. So we see a lot of good changes. I think it's going to take time to recover from what we have lost in the past 4 years.
Elizabeth, what about you? What is the significance of the Nairo Sisters initiative based in San Diego?
Nile Sisters Development Initiative is very, very significant. It's so crucial for refugees and immigrants coming to San Diego, to California in general. Since inception 2001 to now, we have supported thousands of refugees and immigrants to get integrated in the system. And we are statewide, and we are supported by federal, state, and some foundations in the services that we are providing, also including our county, the San Diego County. So our services is wrapped around, is holistic, I'll say, from helping mothers and families to access jobs, to navigate the system of services, to get housing, to put their children to school and mentor them and help their children to succeed in school. Now it's over almost 20 past years in these services. So Nile Sisters is very, very significant to refugees and immigrants. Thank you.
Talk to us about the historical significance of the name Nairo Sisters Initiative. What exactly does that mean, and why did you choose that name?
Thank you. The Nile Sisters Development Initiative came as we were discussing with the African refugees to form a support group. And we came up with several names, and we said that we don't want a name that will be exclusive, but we need a name that includes everybody. Everybody feels welcome in our services. And so Nile, being the longest river in Africa, it is very inclusive. And so we chose to be the Sisters of the Nile. That's the background of the name. So as of now, we are not serving only African refugees, but we extend our services to all refugees coming to San Diego, coming to California. We have the, of course, African refugees, and we have Middle East refugees coming from Haiti, from Burma. We have immigrants even coming from Mexico. So we are very diverse in our clients base. We are very diverse in our staff. Our staff are from different background, from Africa, Haiti, Burma, including our host community members, the Americans. And so we are very, very diverse.
It seems to me that when I listen to you, you seem to be somehow either working with or complementing and perhaps supplementing the work of your fellow panelist.
Yes. We couldn't have come this far without really the support from Mr. Eskander Nagash. Mm-hmm. We are very, very grateful. He was the first ORR key staff who approved our community self-help grant from ORR. ORR is the Office of Refugee Resettlement, and they have this initiative grant specifically for ethnic community-based organizations. And at the time, in 2012, when we applied for the grant, he was in that office. And definitely he saw the name, the Nile Sisters, and he knew that this is very significant. Is women-led African women and supporting refugees from the continent of Africa. Definitely that touched him, and our proposal was very strong, and so he approved our grant. We started doing training on certified nursing assistants. That was 2012, and it came all the way to now. As of now, in fact, we have established CNA school. We are training refugees, immigrants, displaced population here in San Diego and in the state of California to become certified nurse assistant. And that gives them the opportunity to get a job right away, well-paid job, and forever. And especially in this critical time of COVID-19, when healthcare workers are most needed, this is the opportunity Nile Sisters gives to refugees, immigrants, and displaced population to address the shortage of healthcare staff in this industry. We couldn't have come this far without Mr. Eskander's support when he was in the office. And to now, in fact, not only when he was in the office. So thank you so much.
Eskinder, what are some of the, what I call, the fundamental root causes of this massive refugee situation?
Well, I think, Jack, the root cause of refugee always is conflict. As you know, for the past 50, 60 years, one way or another, we have been witnessing conflict in Africa, as you know, going back to the 60s and in Nigeria, with Biafra issues, and just continued since then. You know, Africa is having refugees and IDPs. Just for historical purpose, prior to 1951, when the big powers decided to have a meeting in terms of refugees and came up with the 1951 convention about refugees, I don't believe at that time we had, maybe we had some displaced people, not refugees. But since then, you know, Africa is becoming the center of all refugees, except some of the major crises like Syria, like Iraq, and other places. Currently, as you know, sub-Saharan Africa has host more than 20% of the world refugee population. Over 18 million people in the region are of concern to UNHCR and to NGO community. The number is really increasing because of what's going on in Central African Republic, as you know, the ongoing challenge in Nigeria, and of course South Sudan. The sad thing is, 40 years ago, Shaka, the Sudan used to host a lot of refugees, mostly Ethiopian refugees at that time. After 40 years now, Sudan is hosting 60,000 refugees in the past 3 months. Not in the past 3 years, just in 3 months, Sudan is hosting 60,000 refugees. As I said previously, there are about 120 and 150,000 refugees still in eastern part of Sudan since 1968. Just mind you, with no option returning to their country of origin. These are Eritrean refugees. So when you look at everywhere, the African refugees are just a victim of the internal political crisis. I mean, since 1991, Kenya is holding over probably 400,000 refugees from Somalia in the Dadaab refugee camp. We still have a Kakuma refugee camp. We used to host a lot of South Sudanese. Now we have actually South Sudanese refugees also going to Ethiopia. And then we still have some refugees coming out of Somalia. So the root cause of, unfortunately, for refugees in Africa and elsewhere is the political crisis within their own country. The government's decision, of about their own people and the question of rights, political rights, religious rights, the right to basically be a citizen of their own country. So the displacement of African refugees, I have a feeling, is going to continue because the political situation in Horn and the West is not getting better rather than getting worse.
You talk about those thousands of refugees who especially have been in the Sudan since the late 60s. Are there any options regarding resettlement of some of those refugees?
Unfortunately, the refugees in eastern Sudan didn't get a chance to get resettlement. In fact, most of them, I can assure you, that they want to go back to their country of origin. But unfortunately, the government is not willing to accept them. So they are just in that refugee camp, you know, maybe second, third generation refugees. They are not citizens of Sudan, and maybe, you know, Sudan may probably consider them. But the idea that, you know, other countries have to give you citizenship when your country is denying you that basic citizenship is a sad story. So they are the longest refugees in Africa, as, you know, since 1968, as I say. And then you have the Somali refugees in that camp since 1991, after the fall of the Barre government. And then you have other refugees since 1975 in Algeria, called as Sahrawi refugees. So I think that, you know, the crisis continued because the international community, to some extent, ignored either the crisis or the plight of refugees. You cannot be in refugee camps since 1968 and 1975 and 1991 without any solution. Living very much, you know, it's a concentration camp. You know, it's like refugee warehousing. So they're there. I mean, the UNHCR is trying to help them to survive so they don't die of hunger. But outside that, you know, they don't see any future for them. That's why you see massive migration out of Africa to Europe. We haven't seen, you know, in history. They're going everywhere. Some of them are dying to, you know, to go to Europe. You know, and a number of Eritrean refugees and other African refugees ended up dying in the Mediterranean Sea, as if you remember. Yeah, and we still have refugees in Libya and Niger and other places, basically with no hope or no future. So I think the African Union, to some extent, you know, is not involved. I understand that, you know, if you are sending refugees, but at the same time also trying to solve refugees, doesn't make any sense, you know. So we have a challenge in Africa. There is a refugee hosting country is also a refugee sending country. You know, Ethiopia is hosting about 900,000 refugees, but Ethiopia is also sending 60,000 refugees to Sudan. So the crisis is this vicious circle that we are exchanging refugees, it seems to me. That's why, you know, the old system of keeping refugees for extended period of time, refugee camp, is really collapsing, and refugees are making a decision rather than just dying in refugee camp or living there for 20, 30, 40 years. They decided to try their luck, hoping that Europe will open the door, which is not the case.
You know, Negashley is saying that to whom much is given, more is expected. Any particular reason, for example, why the United States, which remains the only superpower on this planet Earth, cannot come up with some solutions to address some of these problems? Dealing with refugees, don't you really think some would say that when you are a superpower, it comes with the moral obligation?
You know, I think the U.S. has been a leading refugee resettlement country for many, many years. In fact, since 1980, the U.S. resettled about 3.4 million refugees than any other country. I'm not even adding the number of people coming to the U.S. applying for asylum. So U.S. government historically has been very, very welcoming and resettling more refugees, giving them a second chance. I think the past 4 years is something. But the idea of refugees and immigrants as part of the U.S. foreign policy was completely wiped out. But I think the incoming administration, I have a feeling that, in fact, for the Central American issue, they're planning to ask up $4 billion for the next 5 years to really solve some of the chronic issues of poverty, displacement, and government persecution. So we'll see that this administration within 2-3 weeks taking these refugees and immigrant issue as a high priority. In fact, they will be sending a migration bill to Congress, to make some changes in terms of our immigration policy. But I think you are right, since not all refugees will be resettled here or in someplace else, I think the United States and the UN and Security Council and the European Union need to take a lead in trying to solve this, protracted refugee situation, not just only in Africa, but you have millions of refugees, Afghan refugees in Pakistan and Iran. You have Rohingya refugees, as you know, from Burma, now going to be shipped to an island and as refugee camp established. So we hope, and we do the advocacy work to see if the UN Security Council, the United States, and the European Union can take a lead in trying to solve this ongoing protracted conflict and refugee situation. If there is a will, there is a way. We the advocates are pushing, and I have a lot of confidence and hope that the new administration is going to lead by example when it comes to refugees and immigration issues.
Elizabeth, talk to us about some of the challenges that the Nile Sisters Initiative has encountered over the years, and how have you been able to overcome them?
Thank you, Mr. Shaka.
You're most welcome.
Nile Sisters Development Initiative evolved from my personal experience in being a newcomer to this country, not knowing the system and navigating the system to help myself get integrated with my family. So the challenges I see is first getting to know the system, the service system, from learning the basic skills, getting a job, driving, healthcare system, and housing, and then cultural difference. I see a lot of challenges, cultural shock among refugees coming to this country. Like back home, some of our men don't cook. But when they get here, a wife may go to school or go to work, and the husband has to cook. And then that's a challenge. When a wife gets money or salary, she has to contribute equally like the husband. And it is different, like what was at home. So I see a lot of cultural differences, and that causes domestic violence among refugees and African refugees. So when I established Nile Sisters, we were providing skills, as I said, beginning with looking for jobs for refugees. And the CNA program was excellent, perfect, when highly needed in the community. So right now, we are providing the training. Our school is called Learn More. Mm-hmm. Learn More, and the website is learnmorefast.org. Nile Sisters website is nilesisters.org. So the